The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Last year, 26 transgender people suffered violent deaths in the United States, according to the Human Rights Campaign. A majority of those victims were African Americans. One in four transgender people report experiencing hate-based attacks. Other areas of concern for transgender individuals are barriers to health care, gender identification markers on legal documents, lack of media representation, and employment housing discrimination. How do we ensure that a part of our community has the appropriate and necessary police protections? How do we all benefit when we get beyond simplistic gender labels? Call in, join our conversation, 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. And our panel today, we're joined by Heath Fogg Davis, a director of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies at Temple University in Philadelphia, author of Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? Heath, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
Heath, what pronouns do you feel comfortable me using?
Oh, first of all, thank you for asking. Male pronouns, he, him, his.
Fantastic. Monica Roberts is here, founding editor of the TransGrio blog and media chair of Black Trans Advocacy Coalition based in Dallas. And Monica, hi.
Hello.
What pronouns should I be using?
She, her, hers.
Fantastic. And Eric Macias is the board member of the Pride Center of San Antonio and administrator of Men in Transition of San Antonio. Eric, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
And what pronouns should I be using?
He, him, his.
Great. I don't normally ask the question about pronouns when we do the show. And Heath Fogg Davis, if you could help me understand why that question, you said thank you, why the gratitude, why is that important, and why do we do that?
I think it's important to at least consider and not make assumptions based on appearances and what people's voices sound like, how they identify as far as their gender identity goes. And so I think it goes to the larger issue of not making assumptions that evoking sex or gender and different, you know, administrative policies and public policies is always an innocuous thing to do. But there are real repercussions for people who might identify as trans or gender non-binary.
And if I don't get that right, is that a problem?
I think it's only a problem if it gets made a big deal. So I think, you know, a lot of us in the trans community would say, you know, the way to go is if you make a mistake to simply apologize and keep the conversation rolling along to sort of not make a big deal. I also think it's important, you know, one of the things that gets in the way of a discussion, a frank discussion about trans identities and issues that confront us is this assumption that, you know, the feeling that I'm going to make a mistake and I'm going to be embarrassed, that I, you know, if people don't want to be wrong. So I think it's important to build in a certain degree of forgiveness into the conversation to say that we're not always going to get things right about each other, but we can kind of just deal with it and get on with things.
Is should the default where we start from would be a gender neutral language, them, y'all in Texas, words like that?
Yeah.
Is that where I should start?
I mean, it's an interesting question. I think there's different, you know, you'll get different answers from different people. I think in general, like the focus of my work has been on, you know, what the question, why do we invoke gender or the term sex in different you know, public policies in our public sphere when it's not necessary or clear that it's necessary. And then when it is necessary, and sometimes it is, that we're clear about the definitions that we're using and most specifically about why we're doing it. So is there a legitimate reason why we're invoking somebody's sex or gender in a public policy? And that kind of, I think, goes into our sort of interactions in other spheres of society as well. Just to not make assumptions and to have more of a discussion. But to answer your question bluntly, my preference would be for gender-neutral language as much as possible.
There used to be this running gag on Saturday Night Live where this character, Pat, would come on, and the funny factor of it was supposed to be funny, was that no one could ever tell if Pat was a male or a female. And this went on for years. And to me, it seemed like today people would just say, this is ridiculous and not funny. But at the time, it was like one of their big sketches that they would do all the time. So Heath Falk, you know what I'm talking about, Heath?
I do. I'm old enough to remember that SNL skit. Yeah. I think your point goes to sort of like the progress that we've made in our culture as far as how we discuss. The term gender identity was not even used at the time. I'm 49, going on 49 years old. And when I was growing up, this term even of transgender didn't exist. And so I think the terminology that we've used has shifted over time. And recently we're seeing a very rapid turnover in the terminology. So, you know, in the process of writing my book, the terminology changed as I went along, you know, even from going to talking about like gender queerness to gender fluidity. Now we talk about non-binary identities. And so I think that's, some people view that as a problem, like, oh boy, it's just political correctness. But I actually think that's a good thing. It tells us that we're really grappling together as a society about these issues. And I really believe that most people are good-hearted and do not mean harm to trans people or non-binary people. That's not true across the board, but I think that that's true. And so if we can kind of have frank discussions like this, I think that it can go a long ways to putting people's defensiveness down. So you laughed at the joke about Pat years ago. It's okay. A lot of us did, and we're in a different spot now, and we can keep on talking about these things.
But I definitely, the point of the show, what we're going to talk about today is about the epidemic of violence against transgender people. And I think all of this stuff kind of feeds into that. And so, Monica Roberts, can you real quickly sort of talk about where do you think we are with trying to provide adequate police protection for people of all of our community, particularly in the trans community?
It's a mixed bag. It depends on where you are in this country, what part of the country you are in. Dallas, you know, has been considered, you know, and the Dallas PD have been considered the gold standard in terms of how, you know, respectful they are and of the community. And then there are others that have been problematic, like Jacksonville, for example. It's just, and because of the long history, especially for communities of color, the negativity that we have had for generations with police forces, it makes us, even down to the fact that they have been more, you know, seen by communities of color as oppressors and
right,
not on our side.
So we're going to talk about that when we come back from this break. We're talking about transgender in America. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about transgender in America. As being transgender becomes more visible in our community, for some it makes them even a bigger target for those who wish them harm. Why is that happening? And are our law enforcement agencies being able to respond to that adequately? Our number to call in is 210-614-8980. If you got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980. With me in the studio is Eric Macias, board member of the Pride Center of San Antonio and administrator of Men in Transition of San Antonio, and also of SA Trans Guys. Eric, can you tell me, how do you feel things are in San Antonio? Do you think that the trans community here is particularly vulnerable, not receiving adequate police response?
I would say it's a mixture of both. It's definitely a learning process. I know with the center, with Pride Center, that we do safe zone training with SAPD. And in my personal experience, and also speaking amongst my trans siblings, it's been a mixture of both. Sometimes the complication could be where someone doesn't have their documentation that matches, you know, their, I don't like to say corrected, you know, but their name and gender marker. It's not what is desired to be on their ID. Sometimes that does pose a conflict. And then there's also been some very positive interactions with law enforcement to where, you know, we're addressed properly. Like, how would you like for me to address you without making those assumptions? But I would say, you know, there is vulnerability within the community where it's just mixed feelings as far as both positive and the negative.
If there is street violence against a member of our trans community, or even if there's domestic violence, is there a reluctance to call in the police?
Absolutely. Only because of the fear of not knowing of what we're going to face. As it is, you know, we fear oftentimes in the general public of how we're going to be perceived, or the assumption of who we are, that, you know, are we physically stronger or not? Can we be taken seriously if we are truly a victim, or the assumption that we are the aggressor? Or sometimes it just comes down to downright ignorance from law enforcement. But it's been a mixture, but I do see that there's been a little bit of progress, in my opinion.
And the Bexar County Sheriff's Department does have an LGBTQ liaison, and I understand the SAPD has one as well. But the issue is, how well are they doing their jobs? How often have you interfaced with someone from these departments?
I actually have had the opportunity to personally speak with the liaison with Bexar County Sheriff's Department, and I see that they, you know, have been making strides to become visible within the community and also regain trust amongst our community and the Sheriff's Department. As far as, I haven't personally had any interaction with the liaison with SAPD, but I have had some positive experiences with SAPD.
So Heath Fogg Davis, in your book, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? You tell some stories of people who have felt, who have dealt with discrimination because their IDs don't match up with the way that they present in everyday life. And can you talk about why do we have these markers on our IDs?
Yeah, I mean, that's the major question that I pose across a number of different case studies. I begin the book talking about that case study of why, you know, asking the question, why do we have gender markers on our government issued personal identification documents? And the question, I mean, the answer to it, I think, is that it's not necessary that we have those gender markers there. It does not, the gender as a category is not a good proxy for our personal identification, which is the legitimate reason for government issuing driver's licenses, passports, birth certificates, things like that in the first place. If you think about, like, you know, and the argument would be, you know, to prevent fraud. And if you think about credit card companies, which have a very high, strong interest in preventing identity fraud, we don't have gender markers on our credit cards. And that's because it's a very, it's a useless form of identifying us personally. So to kind of really zoom in on the question, like, why are we doing this? Is it just social custom? We've always had sex markers on, you know, job applications, on driver's licenses. Think of all the forms that you fill out where you've been asked your sex and is it a male or female? A lot of that is just rote habit, you know, that we've been doing it for so long and we never stop to think about why we're doing it. And it can seem like a very little thing, but it has really serious repercussions, as Eric was just pointing out. And it even connects back to what we're you were talking about with Monica. There is a real connection between violent attacks against, you know, in particular Black trans women and Latino trans women, and lack of civil rights protections. And so all these forms of, you know, the identification documents that render specific individuals vulnerable when they're pulled over for a routine traffic stop, for example, and they're scrutinized because of their identity or their physical appearance, it means that that person lacks full civil rights protections.
Well, does our society, or has our society, and the society is in transition as well, we've wanted to impose this binary view of gender, and that if you're this, you're this, and if you're not this, you could be, then you should be that. And if you don't fall into those questions, then we have, then you're less than if you don't fit into those boxes. I'm going to go take this call because I think it's along those lines. The number is 210-614-8980, and Barbara is on the line. And Barbara, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
You bet. This is great. Thank you so much for having this conversation. And but I don't know what the term binary means. I heard this person talk about it when I first got on, and I didn't know what it meant.
All right, Barbara, thank you for the call. And so, Eric Macias, do you want to help us out and tell us what is binary?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, the others, please feel free to jump in and expand the definition. My interpretation of binary is what's matching what society deems to be male or female. For example, society deems that men should look masculine and should behave masculine, and women should be feminine and appear feminine looking. So one way I see it is, or I've explained it, is matching what the social norm expects a man or woman to be.
And Monica Roberts?
So based on genitalia, that if you have a penis, you are supposed to be quote unquote male, and if you have a vagina, you are supposed to be female. And with all the other societal expectations that go with having that particular genitalia.
And Heath Fogg Davis, can you tell us more about that, but also talk a little bit about intersexed. What is that?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up too. So there are, you know, many people who are born with what are considered intersex conditions, which could be variations in internal or external genitalia. There are a wide range of these. So the scientific evidence is there that intersex people exist, and they have been fighting for their civil rights. And there's some overlap with the trans civil rights advocacy that we've been seeing. And then there are some differences, but that really just blows apart this idea, this deep assumption that there are just two sexes, and that you can know this just by the appearance of somebody's genitals. So there's sort of there's biological quote unquote range. Things are on a continuum much more than we think about. And of course that has a direct impact on how we socially talk about these issues.
Is it a spectrum? Is that one way to look at it? You could fall anywhere on that spectrum and maybe even move around, Heath?
Absolutely. I think, you know, both. So one of the things that I'd like for your listeners to know and for us to talk about is that there's incredible variation within the trans community. And so this is an umbrella term that encompasses a whole lot of different experiences. And so, you know, my experience as an African-American trans man who is binary, meaning that I basically adhere in my dress and comportment to masculine social standards, My experience is going to be different from Monica's and others within the community. For people who don't want to identify with either, you know, male or female and see themselves somewhere in the middle there, or want to go back and forth and are more fluid, that there's a whole range. And that means that the image that's invoked when we mention trans or transgender might be one particular stereotype, but there's a whole, you know, that as with all stereotypes, you know, it includes the fact that there's a lot of variation and a lot of different experiences and different levels of vulnerability to the kinds of violent attacks that we're also keeping in mind in our conversation here.
I'm going to go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Scott. Scott, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. And Scott.
Hi. I just wanted to touch base. He's made a good point. Peter Singer in Project Syndicate writes about, in Australia, in a paper, why should sex matter? He really points out that it really shouldn't, and down there they have male, female, and indeterminate, and that seems to alleviate a lot of the binary issues that kind of what we're talking about here today. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you for that, Scott. And does that solve problems, Heath?
I think the addition of a third gender category, and we've seen this in different states have done this with their driver's licenses, and DC was, I think, the first, and then Oregon, California, a number of states have moved to this where you can have an X as an option. And then Australia, as the caller said, has done this with their passports. I think there's some, I like the impetus behind it, which is to get the ball moving. But I think that we really have to go the full distance and get gender markers off of our passports and off of our driver's licenses altogether, because they don't serve a legitimate purpose. There are so many better ways that we can personally identify people when it's necessary. And that forces a conversation about privacy in our government. Like, what does the government need to know about me? Do they need to know about my gender transition, or just me as a human being and as a citizen for tax purposes, for example?
And Monica Roberts, what's your take on that?
In terms of
having a third choice, particularly in things like driver's license.
That's fine for folks that want to. But as far as I'm concerned, I've spent the last 25 years of my life just trying to get recognized and have an F on my driver's license and be recognized as female I am. So, you know, while that to me, you know, the gender binary is an interesting development and stuff, there's still a lot of us, that are very happy being part of the binary and are fighting just to be recognized as the men and women we are.
And there are those who don't want you to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. Yes. That is, I'll say, especially the Republican Party, the evangelicals, which are, I say, the trans exclusionary radical feminists. Let's see who else. And, you know, they can basically, and they're doing it in large part as their reaction to what happened in 2015 with the Obergefell decision. The Republican Party kind of made a decision at that point, along with the conservative movement, to attack transgender people for political gain. And we saw that firsthand when we passed the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance in 2014, and then they basically got forced to repeal by exclusively attacking the transgender community.
All right, we're taking a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation talking about transgender in America, particularly when it comes to providing police protection for everyone in our community, but also other issues of getting health care, and also lack of media representation, employment and housing discrimination. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The violent deaths of two African-American trans women in Dallas recently has brought focus to an epidemic of violence against people in the transgender community. We're talking about that this hour. You're welcome to call in 210-614-8980. Monica Roberts is with us, the founding editor of the TransGrio blog and media chair for the Black Trans Advocacy Coalition based in Dallas. Monica, can you talk about how these attacks in the Dallas area, how did the community respond?
There were a couple of ways that they did respond. When the initial one happened to Malaysia Booker back on April the 12th, there was the initial rally that happened, and then after Malaysia's unfortunate murder, and then the second one with Chanel Lindsay happening, that turned into not only my organization, Black Trans Advocacy Coalition, helping to co-sponsor some rallies and marches. We also went down, myself and Dee Dee Waters, who is also on the board of BTAC, went down to Austin during the last week of the session to point out that the state legislature had an opportunity to pass the Byrd Hate Crimes Act. Add transgender people to it. It is something that we've been fighting for 20 years now. And Representative Garnett Coleman has been pushing since 2007. It had only gotten a hearing twice. And matter of fact, the hearing that they held on April 29th was literally days after a trans man, a Black trans man, was attacked by his boss in Killeen, Texas. But they left the bill pending, and it died, let's say, during when the session ended. I fault the Trump administration and also our state legislators like Dan Patrick and others for fostering this climate of anti-trans animus with their attempts to pass, the bathroom bill, SB6, with creating the anti-trans animus that has led to increased violence that is being disproportionately borne by Black and brown trans folks.
From Ashley on Twitter, she writes, the Texas GOP party platform reads, "We oppose all efforts to validate transgender identity." The question is, how does the current political rhetoric contribute to violence against transgender community, and what can our leaders do to keep us safer? Let me go to Heath Fogg Davis, author of Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? What's the connection between all of these factors, including what's going on in our political sphere and the violence?
I think Monica put it, very accurately and described it very well. I mean, it fosters a climate in which the humanity of us as individual people gets erased, and it's sort of a process of othering when you don't see a human connection with another person, it's easier to see them not as human as you, and as like deserving of discrimination, oppression, violence. And so it's the same story that we've seen with other persecuted minority groups. I will say that one of the things that I hope that we can remember, keep in mind, in the society, even as we have a federal government such as it is right now, which is the whole purpose of civil rights legislation is to protect vulnerable minorities who are numerically vulnerable, politically not powerful. So to really sort of to see some of the civil rights laws twisted and used against trans people, like I'm thinking about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is passed. This is a federal law that was passed in 1993, which has been twisted. It originally was intended to protect religious minorities from, you know, having their viewpoints completely stamped out, has been twisted around to now we see religious exemption laws being passed where healthcare providers are being told that they can, based on their religious beliefs, deny providing basic healthcare to somebody because they're transgender. And this goes across, you know, it's a whole sort of slippery slope with your beliefs about what does it mean then? So the connection really is like there's the actual deaths of individuals, and then there's the social death that precedes that, which the social death is that you're excluded from civil society almost completely. And that's a real thing that's happening right now as our civil rights laws that were passed for one reason are now being twisted and used for a completely other kind of malignant purpose.
Eric Macias, a board member of the Pride Center of San Antonio. In the legislative session, there was a lot of debate about and bills being authored about allowing businesses and even medical caregivers being able to not provide medical care to individuals based upon their sincerely held religious beliefs, giving them the pass to not provide medical care to individuals that, you know, they don't like trans, they don't got to give you first aid, apparently. Except, and the exception was, of course, if it would save someone's life, then you have to. But these types of laws coming about in Texas, Eric, do you think that, was that being talked about? Was that being understood by your community? And how are people adjusting to that?
I think any time our community faces anything that goes against us, we don't adjust well.
Deeper?
The one thing about our community is that we are very stubborn and persistent individuals, I would have to say. Regardless if these laws are written or, you know, passed, I can say just about anyone that I know who's trans-identified has experienced that before. Just giving the green light for things to be established is just giving people the green light to make it more vocal or more visible to discriminate against us. And it's rather unfortunate because that's what causes a lot of trans people to not seek medical attention, even if they're in a compromising situation. I know that there's been, you know, I've known of some trans men who have needed to get, you know, OBGYN care services and neglect their health care for that reason, because they're discriminated against. It's an unfortunate thing, and it's definitely an uphill climb. But we're going to keep pushing and fighting. That's the best thing that we can do for now.
What can we do to help people get the health care that they need, particularly in those circumstances? I mean, there needs to be a level of sensitivity.
I would say be a good ally if you're not trans-identified, and educate. You know, having conversations like this open up, you know, the minds and opportunities for people to learn, because we've been in existence before. I think what a lot of people fail to see is that now that we're visible in media, regardless of how we're represented, and unfortunately, you know, poorly at times, that we've existed. And these are problems and issues that we have faced, and they've been a long time coming. But to help us out is to, you know, be a good ally, educate, and keeping conversations like this open.
Let's go back to the phone.
I'd also like to piggyback on what Eric just said. We also need education in the medical schools of this state on trans medical care. And also to point out that a lot of times we're not going to doctors just to have stuff, you know, the medical care that is related to our transition. Sometimes I need to go to the doctor because I got a cold, you know, I have symptoms of a flu. And I don't want to be disrespected when I come into a medical office. Just non-trans related health care. You know, there are times when I say the medical profession needs to do a better job of not only educating us when folks are going through their education, because there's barely, when I talk to one medical student, they only spend 2 hours total on trans medical stuff.
And I guess it can be exhausting that every time you have an encounter with someone and you have to explain, I'm trans, and their reply is, what's that, Monica?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where you're training your healthcare givers. Yeah, that is exhausting.
And Heath, can you add to that?
Yeah, this is a really important set of points to make. I think in the medical setting, we all, if you think about like the paperwork that we fill out, you're sitting in a doctor's room or something like that, or in the ER, often you're asked to check a male or female sex box. And why are we being asked that? It's because those categories are used as proxies for particular body parts. And so I think a lot the more progressive medical education right now, people who are working towards being more sensitive to these issues are having a discussion about, like, how do we have a conversation? How do we do an intake with a new patient across the board? Because some of us will appear to be trans and some won't. And you have to figure out as a medical provider when and how and why somebody's gender identity is relevant to, you know, the healthcare that you're providing. Like Monica just said, if I go to a doctor because of a severe flu or a broken leg or something like that, it's not clear that that my gender identity is relevant to that.
All right, we're going to take another break. We'll come back. We've got some phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about transgender in America. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Back in 1 minute. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about transgender in America. The number is 210-614-8980. I got an email from Sanizo. He says, thanks for highlighting trans issues here in Texas and San Antonio. During Pride, their voices can be left out because of lingering prejudices in our own community, and that needs to change. So I'm confused by this, so help me understand, Erica Macias. Isn't in the LGBTQ community in and of itself, is there still some sort of problem with trans?
Absolutely. I know that might seem shocking from an outsider looking in. Oftentimes, you know, too many times, the T falls silent, where we face discrimination or people don't understand, or there's a lot of transphobia within the community. And there's a big bridge. There's a big gap in that bridge, and that is absolutely correct. I mean, I've attended Pride for several years here, and even prior to my transition, and I know trans people existed, and it was very seldom that I saw anything. I think now that I'm involved, more involved within the community, I see now, it's nice to see, younger folks coming out, and people are being supportive, but there is a lot of resistance where people within our community don't take us serious, or they don't understand, or they just simply feel like we don't belong, or that we're just seeking attention. And people forget that trans people have laid the foundation for our movement. So I think, that very much so. And I think I don't want to speak on behalf of everyone, but I think we all agree that we, you know, trans people are the ones who laid the foundation for the movement, and the community is lacking to see that. And they exclude us too many times.
Okay, Monica?
Yeah. Yeah, I would also like to point out that we have actually had situations, because I've been an activist now for 21 years, and there have been times where I've had more opposition from the lesbian and gay end of the community than I have from the religious right and the Republican Party. I can give an example of that. Back 20 years ago, when I did my first lobby day here in Texas, we went there as a community to try to make sure that we would be included in the James Byrd, you know, the state James Byrd hate crimes bill. And it was the, you know, say the LGRL, which was the Lesbian Gay Rights League, that actually cut us out of that bill. Not once, but over two consecutive sessions, in the 99 and the 2001 sessions. And the bathroom argument, that didn't start with the Republican Party. That started with Representative Barney Frank.
Let's go to the phone lines with Akeem. Akeem, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to... I know that it might not be the Republican Party that we're talking about right now, but it is, since it is part of their platform that they oppose transgender rights, but at the same time they want to promote individual rights for their lifestyles. I think that in itself is like a hypocritical way of thinking, that just because you don't necessarily live a certain lifestyle, that it's okay to discriminate against somebody else's lifestyle that's not necessarily hurting anybody else or doing anything like that. So if your platform is that, oh, we believe in individual rights and that the government, these rights should be protected and individual rights should be protected, then why are you opposing another individual's rights just because it's not the way that you choose to live your life?
Okay, Akeem, thank you for that. Heath Fogg Davis, author of Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? Is there a flaw in the strategy of trying to partisanize this issue?
Well, I think that the caller is sort of referring to two parts of the Republican Party, the social conservatives and the libertarians. And the libertarians, to a great extent, I think, can get with the argument about self-determination and extend that to gender identity. And then social conservatives have a different argument. It makes me think, though, of an important example. You mentioned the bathroom bills. You know, the fear mongering around that issue has all been based on a stereotype that is just, well, actually like something that has never happened, which is this idea that a trans woman is a man dressed as a woman who's going to go into a women's bathroom and attack women and girls. And so, first of all, that's not the definition of what trans women are. And second of all, that has never happened. Girls and women have been assaulted in women's restrooms by, cisgender men who have had no compunction about disobeying the signage and going into that bathroom. So I think that, you know, that argument that gets recycled on by social conservatives, that this is about protecting girls and women, and that the bathrooms have to be protected in this way, just falls apart on every side of any kind of logic.
Another caller?
That's also...
Okay, Monica?
That's also an argument, that bathroom argument, that conservatives have been playing and recycling since the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Fear of the bathroom is their go-to boogeyman. Anytime they want to oppose human rights advancement for any marginalized group.
You came up during...
They did it with African Americans, did it with mm-hmm. the gay community. They even used the bathroom argument to say against passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, in which they said back then that, you know, passage of the Equal Rights Amendment would lead to people having to go into gender neutral bathrooms, or you know, so it's an old say that they have retooled now to attempt to use it against the trans community.
One more caller. Let me get Cynthia on the line. And Cynthia, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having this program on. My husband, I lost him. I lost her. I lost her September 19, 2016. We'd been married almost 59 years, and we were very involved in the gender community, and I still am. She went into the hospital for a hernia operation, and she did put it off too long because she was nervous about it, had never been in a hospital before in her life. And we went through it, and we didn't have any problem with the doctor. Everything worked out, but the nurse, she had to spend the night in the hospital, and I feel the nurse killed my Linda. And that's just my feeling. And I'm very upset still because we were very, very close. And it's very, very hurtful still. So I appreciate you doing this. And I assume you know that the Transamerica exhibit is going on at the McNay Art Museum right now through September 15th.
Cynthia, thank you so much for calling. I'm so sorry about your loss and what happened to your partner there. Let's go to Eric Macias. This, all of these things, all of them, the pronouns, the issues with police, the issues with being kept out of the, feeling uncomfortable in your classroom and going to school, being in this job discrimination, they lead to very serious circumstances like Cynthia's loss.
Definitely, most definitely. I've had the privilege of mentoring a young man where he started his medical transition and he's 14 now. He's going to be graduating this coming year. He's going to be a senior. And just simple things of helping, you know, his parents with the pronouns and how he, there was one occasion where he wanted to try out for the tennis team and the coach made sure to make an example how he was mentally unstable. And just that in itself, you know, deterred him in his academics. Just that one simple statement and having to rebuild him to get refocused. The other thing, you know, I always say that as trans people, we have a resume for our lives. You know, some of us who are older having to go, you know, to apply for a job, some of the job history is, you know, in a prior name or a dead name, as said, and having to explain that. Or once, you know, you can be an outstanding employee and once management finds out, you're no longer. And, you know, I've had a situation happen like that where I was working for a really good company, making really good money, and began my transition, and that's back in 2004, and had to walk away from that job because of how much discrimination I was facing and how it affected my livelihood all around. Same thing, you know, having to deal with situations in an ER where, you know, I thought I got into an accident. I thought I broke my collarbone, and all they could focus on was what procedures, what surgeries, and why, versus trying to give me the proper care. So it's a never-ending process, and same thing, you know, going down to, like you said, having the right documentation. It's a never-ending process. Our transitions are, we're always in transition. But, you know, there is a silver lining, and I can confidently say, you know, not just the three of us who are here in this discussion, many of us will be the fighting force to make life better for not just us, but for the future.
Eric Macias is a board member of the Pride Center of San Antonio and administrator of Men in Transition of San Antonio and also of SA Trans Guys. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eric.
Thank you.
Monica Roberts is a founding editor of the Trans Griot blog and media chair of the Black Trans Advocacy Coalition based in Dallas. Monica, it was great to have you. And Heath Fogg Davis is the director of gender, sexuality, and women's studies at Temple University in Philadelphia, author of the book Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? Heath Fogg Davis, it was an honor to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.